When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so yet another week gone, yet another international break looms, and we're here once more at the climax of game week 7 to talk about reactions to how things have gone down. There's quite a lot to cover this week, so we'll get straight into it. We're a man down today, but we've more than ably filled that gap, as Nick will get on and introduce. But first, you all right, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, Tom. Yeah, good spirits again, because it was a good game week for me, but it's been a massive yo-yo season in general. It's 4 great weeks, 3 dreadful weeks, as my game week rank continues to oscillate up and down. So we are Who Got The Assist. Make sure to follow us on social media channels, give the pod a like or subscribe. We're also on Instagram, apparently wgta.fpl, if you want to follow us on there. So as Tom alluded to, there's no Anthony this week due to doing his college exams. Good luck, mate. But we're more than compensating for his absence with our guest this time. So we're joined by the Danger, Wes, aka FPL Heisenberg. So Wes, do you want to give us an introduction to yourself and where you can be found?
Cheers for that, Nick. And yeah, first of all, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Been a fan of the pod for years. And yeah, I've been playing FPL for 7 years. This is my 8th year. And before then, various fantasy games, like I'm sure you boys have been into as well. And in terms of where you can find me, I'm at FPL_Heisenberg on Instagram and Twitter. And I've been on Twitter for a good few years now. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. Welcome. Well, it's good to have you on. Yeah, it definitely is a lot of fun, isn't it? Although, you know, every now and again, just stepping back to watch it and comment on it is a lot more fun than actually being engaged with it, isn't it? On the agenda this week, it's looking back on the weekend, which saw no-show meltdowns galore and benches utilised to their fullest, hence the chat about stepping back and laughing at it at times. And thinking about team structure, will these no-shows intensify, or was it an anomaly? Will managers like Safety First Nick be loving it this year? Also, there's correspondence on wildcards and the Q&A. But first, it's the game reviews followed by the market forces. Let's go with game reviews first. I think I finished bottom, so maybe I'll keep trundling on. I got 54 this week. It's a bit of a frustrating week, really. I've gone absolutely nowhere, basically got a grey arrow. Started off pretty well, getting Reece James actually on the pitch, for example, and Mo Salah getting the goal, obviously. But when I captained Son, and it just kind of disintegrated from that point onwards. I mean, the Grealish was okay. Kane, everyone owns him. Shea Adams, I felt very lucky to get anything from Shea Adams. He had no shots, no key passes, nothing, but he got an assist for a set piece. But yeah, Son not scoring, not doing anything was really annoying. That was kind of, he scores double digits for 3 weeks in a row before this one. And on the week I captain, he obviously gets 2. 4 out of 7 captain blanks now for me, which is, it wouldn't be so annoying if they were like punts, but it was Kevin De Bruyne twice, Salah and Son who have been my kind of captain culprits. So not particularly good arm blank, but you know, Spurs had an off day, Son had an off day, and he's not on penalties. So 2 of those 3 I can't legislate for. It's just a bit unlucky. So yeah, 53, 54 I think I've got, and yeah, still 1.5 million. But meh, what can you do? Next, I think it's you, Wes, isn't it?
Yes, so I got 71 this week with Luckman's 2 points and Justin's 2 points coming in today as well. Pretty big rank jump, so I can't complain. I went from around 1.4 million to, it looks like, about 850k. So shows like one, you know, decent week can get a big jump. So, you know, don't panic if you're out there with a poor rank at the minute. Who did well for me? Yeah, Grealish as well. I had Salah captain, who was probably the best of a the three I was considering, along with Son and Kane. And my three strikers all bagged one goal, Kane, DCL and Ings. And Lamptey got a little bit lucky there. I had to use my squad because I had the likes of Sace and Mitchell, but I'll come on to that a little bit more later.
Cool. So, yeah, looks like I got the highest score this week with 75 points. So, yeah, really happy with that. Started off relatively badly, I guess, with Pulisic. It was meant to play, but he got injured in the warm-up, so didn't play. But I had Kurt Zouma in that game, and he got me a lovely 14-pointer. So, really, really happy with that. I captained Salah, actually, over the Spurs guys, and that worked out well in the end as well. 8 times 2 for him, so 16 points there. So pretty decent start. And then I had sort of Grealish and Calvert-Lewin on the Sunday, and both of them sort of return last minute goals, which makes a change from, you know, losing last minute clean sheets. Very nice to get those sort of 90 plus minute goals from Grealish and Calvert-Lewin. So 15 from Grealish and 8 from Calvert-Lewin. Got the returns from Kane, obviously, in the Spurs game, and Adams picked up that assist that Tom mentioned. And then tonight, yeah, it went pretty well, I guess, tonight with the Dallas goal as well. So, you know, when your luck's in, your luck's in. But
pulled that out of your posterior, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. That was a jam, another jammy goal. But the player that came off the bench, unfortunately, was Walker Peters with 1 point. So I didn't get Lamptey's goal, unfortunately. So Lamptey, 9 points on the bench. But can't complain too much with that return. Very much a yo-yo season for me.
No, certainly, certainly. And I think it's been a very interesting game week for a lot of people in terms of how they're reacting to it. Moving on to the market forces now, it's one where we're not really seeing much forward action. It's all about the defenders, and you in particular must be very happy with the man who's number one there, Nick.
It's all about the Z's in the market forces this game week. Not nap time, but Zouma and Ziyech. And yeah, as I mentioned, Zouma got me 14 points. He's had 217,000 transfers in so far. And yeah, he's a player certainly I've been attracted to because of his great underlying stats. He's had 5 shots on target, which is the highest of all defenders. And he's also got 3 goals to his name. There's definitely a good chance of more goals, actually, because he loves a header. All 5 of his goal attempts have been headers, and all have been on target. And they have Sheffield United up next, who have incidentally conceded 26 headed goal attempts, which is 7 more than any other team so far this season. So big chance he could score again there. So that's a really interesting stat that I found.
Boom.
his teammate Ziyech, in his first start for the Blues, picked up a goal and assist and fills that nice price point, 8 million. We'll probably have some questions on that kind of thing later. But he's had 192,000 transfers in. And it's actually a triple Chelsea in terms of the transfers in, because Chilwell's third with 122,000 transfers in. And he's had a great start as well to his Chelsea career. He's returned in every single game so far he's played in, with goal, 2 and assists and 3 clean sheets. Pretty impressive. What do you think of the Chelsea guys then, Wesley? Are you backing them at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't got any at the minute, but I'm jealous of your Zouma pick, because looking at the expected goals conceded stats earlier, with looking at all the teams in the league, Chelsea are now best for that stat with a score of 7.12. That's from Fantasy Football Hub, those stats. And obviously their fixtures in the next 3 are pretty good as well. Sheffield United, Newcastle and Leeds, 3 of their next 4, which, you know, is pretty good. And like you said, obviously Sheffield United conceding a lot of headed chances, which could be, you know, a Chilwell or Ziyech assist for a Zouma goal, depending on which one of them takes the set pieces. So yeah, I'm potentially looking at a Chelsea defender in for my team.
Yeah, certainly. They're very popular in that market forces this week. Otherwise, in terms of who's being brought in, we've got Jack Grealish. He's had 120,000 transfers in. He's the 4th most transferred in player. We've also got Max Kilman, great name. 110,000 transfers in time of recording. A lot of people targeting the cheap Wolves man, but Wolves fixtures actually do stiffen a little bit. And in terms of transfers out, it's no surprise in terms of injured players. They always seem to top this with Castagna. He's had 233,000 transfers out. But a lot of defenders there. Sice didn't play. Mitchell didn't play. But we've also got the Liverpool guys, Trent, Alexander-Arnold, with 100,000 transfers out. And Robbo's also being sold quite heavily with 47,000 transfers out. Do you reckon it's time to go without the Liverpool guys, Liverpool defence, Wesley?
If I was on a wild card, I'd probably be... Well, I'd almost certainly be going without either of them. On my work wild card in week 3, I did switch Trent to Robbo. a very easy move, isn't it? Something like Robertson or Trent down to someone like Chilwell. It saves over $1 million and you're getting possibly a better asset there as well. Also, to kind of contradict myself, I'd also be happy to keep them, which is why I'm personally keeping Robertson. I'm hoping they, you know, revert back to their solid defensive stats at some point soon. And they've always got attacking threat, those two. So I'm happy to hold as I have them, but I wouldn't be transferring them in.
Yep, don't buy, don't sell. Very annoying assets to hold indeed. I wish I got rid of them a long time ago. All right, let's move on to the main topic, which is about team structure this week, growing out of a multitude of bench shocks that impacted FPL managers this game week. The likes of Mitchell, Sice, Pulisic, Mope and Ryan were all no-shows, and Werner got very, very lucky to get on the pitch. We've also seen a few epic off the benches, which have been infecting post-auto-sub ranks this week. So Lamptey off the bench for many, 9 points. Some cases coming off the bench second and third with 9 points, which is very, very lucky indeed. And Dallas tonight as well, I'm sure, off the bench for many. And there's also a cameo for Foden, which led to a lot of fretting online. And there's a good question this week we got from James Corral at j.corral on Twitter, which really summed this up. He asked, what team structure best suits the current challenges? I guess, you know, we always used to in the past sort of favour kind of one bench asset, I suppose, and then having mostly dross being slots two and three. But this year it does look like having kind of two bench assets to call on, you know, be they kind of the 4.5 million defenders who obviously you can play or rotate as necessary, or the 0.5s in midfield, or Brewster, 4.5 million forwards. Owning two seems to be a fairly good idea, doesn't it? But do we think that this week was the start of things to come in terms of the heavy rotation, or is it kind of a one-off?
I think this week is a little bit of a one-off, but what I'm worried about more is self-isolations and the fact that this is a strange season where, you know, fixtures are more condensed. But obviously we saw it earlier on in the season, didn't we, with Mane, and I think it's, is it 11 of the Ajax players have gone down with it. So I think there's going to be weeks where you're going to miss a lot of players. So what I've done is just a kind of a minor tweak. Whereas at the start of this year, I wasn't actually on this mindset. I had the likes of Smallbone and, you know, 4 million Mitchell, for example, on my bench. But on my wildcard, I decided that I wanted to upgrade Smallbone to Soucek, who, okay, fair enough, he hasn't done much so far. But I'm still happier to have him on my bench as a with more attacking threat than any of the sort of 4.5 million midfielders. I guess if you're playing 3-5-2, Brewster could be that player. But at the minute, he's still obviously settling at Sheffield United, not really getting 90 minutes. So I do prefer the option of having the likes of a Soucek or Lookman, and also spending an extra 0.5 and getting, instead of having two 4.0 defenders, getting in the 4.5 defender, the likes of Lamptey or whoever. I just think it's sensible this year.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree with you there. I think certainly this campaign is different to any campaign we've seen before. Obviously, we've got the lurking COVID issue, but we've also got like the fixture congestion that is caused as well. I saw like interview with Pep where he'd highlighted a 47% rise in muscular injuries due to lack of preparation and the amount of games teams are playing. So I don't know where he got his stats from specifically, but you know, that's a massive surprise to see that. And you know, like looking at sort of teams like Spurs, they've had 13 games since the 13th of September, so that's a game every 3.6 games. And that's when you consider that one of those games is actually cancelled against Leighton Orient. And there's been an international break in the middle of that where, for some reason, there were three games, which is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Yeah. There was three games during that international break. So all of those players were knackered. You know, likes of KDB went off on a cycle ride and then came back and said he was completely fatigued and disappeared for a couple of weeks. So, you know, so much is going on. And you know, having that strong bench, it feels certainly important, at least for the upcoming fixture run, especially coming up to Christmas, which is always a congested period.
Yeah, I mean, just to combine both your points, I think on that kind of Pep point, I think there's kind of the physical side. I think there's also in that sort of ongoing onslaught of games, there's that mental side too. There's a really fascinating piece by Sarah Shepherd in The Athletic this morning about mental fatigue and the impact on recovery and elite performance. And in it, the author and lots of mental health advocates like Marvin Sordell, the ex-footballer, was saying the clubs need to begin to really pay heed to this side of things, you know, and give players the mental breaks too. And I suspect kind of there was a bit of that with KDB. He was sounding off the media about being a little bit tired about it, not really having a break for a little while. And for example, this weekend, Potter said that Matt Ryan was being given a break after having been playing 2 or 3 years relentlessly. So I expect that side to crop up as well as there kind of being COVID. As I said at the beginning, completely agree with you there, Wes, in that it's worth having those 4.5 million defenders, particularly as being your benchmen. They're the ones that I'm really favouring, the ones with the high X-mins, the high expected minutes. I guess, you know, going to bench three is rare, like very rare historically. That'd be very bad luck. You know, once a season you get there. But I wager, I don't have any stats to prove this. It's just a new context, as Nick has said. But I suspect this year we're going to see more bench excavations than ever before. So maybe a 4.5 million defender and a 4.5 million forward or mid you can count on are pretty good. But I probably favour having, you know, a Webster type and then, you know, maybe a Justin or something who can just kind of come off the bench, give you 2 points every now and again. And there just might have to be exceptions, you know, that 2 points are better than none some weeks. I know that sounds really crap. Like most game weeks, you do go in thinking, yeah, 80 plus, that's what we want. But as it pans out, it makes me better to accept, you know, you're getting these 2 points sometimes, and that's better than a no-show, frankly. We've seen this week, like, how bad things have gone for a lot of people that after one game, people were already into bench two if they'd started Sice and Mitchell. It might be better to take a long view, perhaps, and just think all these little kind of 1 or 2 pointers go into like a bank account towards the end of your season OR, even if a week is disappointing. As managers, I mean, we've spoken about the mentality of the players, and we have kind of touched on this a few times in terms of FPL already this season, because it's been quite a tough one, a bit of a strange one. I mean, Wes, what's your take on that? Like, you said earlier on that you kind of had a big jump in rank this week, so I guess you were kind of struggling along like I was until this week. How were you dealing with those challenges of things not going how you'd like them to be?
Yeah, no, it's been difficult. I've been, like I alluded to earlier, been sort of treading water at the sort of 1.4 million rank mark, which is not where I want to be. I've been missing out on big hauls. Like, you know, in previous seasons, you might get punished by, you know, Kane getting a brace away at Southampton and maybe Son getting one assist there, which would have been, you know, manageable. But those players getting, what, they both got 22, 24 points or something, didn't they? So, and likewise with players like James Rodriguez has punished me early on. So I think with the high scoring games that we were seeing in sort of weeks 1 to 5, was it? The stats back it up that there was a lot of goals in those games. So if he wasn't hitting, then he was getting hit sort of twice as hard. Mm. But I've just tried to stick to what I have done for the last sort of 6-7 years, which is, you know, sticking to the principles, sticking into, you know, looking into the stats, watching as much football as I can, trying to get on, you know, bring in the best players I can and move forward from there. But it has been tough, and it's definitely frustrating, but it is still early days that I've got to keep, you know, telling myself.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think also as well, like, we did see a lot this week of just some bedlam, I guess, in the FPL community of people kind of finding it very difficult to deal with the kind of what was going on with a lot of the benches. And we've spoken about this a little bit in the recent past, and I really think that kind of the individual game scheduling intensifies and amplifies this sort of neuroses that people kind of go through. And I understand completely why the Foden cameo, if other things were going on at the same time, you wouldn't be as upset about that. So, you know, he gets 1 point and that's the only game going on. So people are like really focusing on the fact that their guy has come on, you know, and got them 1 point. Whereas if that had happened alongside other games happening, so people getting goals and assists elsewhere, it would minimise or at least kind of dilute the impact. But the fact that you've got one thing going on at a time, it really kind of intensifies the focus. And I think that it kind of means that people get really kind of bogged down, I guess, in the negativity every now and again. You have to just walk away, I suppose. But enough about us as managers. Get back to the kind of the key question, which is about our team setups. And I guess it does sound like we're looking at kind of having a little bit more money invested on the bench, so to speak, and a little bit more kind of solidity around the players that we're picking. But how does this impact our transfer strategy? What sorts of players are we favouring? I mean, is it time for kind of these high risk, high reward players to be binned off steady and stable picks, Nick? Is it time for the Nick pick to come to fruition?
Certainly, when you're looking at who you're picking, you're favouring those safe picks, aren't you? You're favouring those talisman, as we always like to call out, the likes of Grealish, the likes of Wilf Zaha, over those sort of Phil Foden or Riyad Mahrez type characters that can flit in and out of the team. I think certainly backing the guys, especially this season where we're seeing so many more penalties, to sort of trust in those guys, like sort of Zaha perhaps, or Callum Wilson, who we were just talking about going on the pod as well, who's sort of that key man for Newcastle, being involved in 8 of their 9 goals. I think just looking at those sort of players, I feel like very much you might describe it as safety first, but I don't even know if it is safety first technically. I mean, typically previous seasons we've been talking about triple Liverpool and triple Manchester City and loading up on these teams, even if the third man is a Phil Foden type person, you know, and at some point that might cause us some damage. It's been a bit of a strange season, you know, likes of City, United, all struggling in the league, and teams like Villa sort of really doing well, or West Ham as well. But, you know, might later on in the season, we might get caught out by going through these some of these characters like Zaha over perhaps some of these Manchester City assets that might get more points later on in the season. But I think certainly at the moment, feels like targeting the talisman is a very strong and valid strategy, as they will typically play most weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, and especially using the Foden example again, I've always found players like that to be frustrating because you know that they've got the talent, you know that they can do it when on the pitch. But even when Foden got, you know, he had a rest in the previous game week, so people thought, like, you know, he's going to start this week, and you still can't predict it. And then even players like, you know, Podence got a goal this week, but he's still not interesting me because, although when I watch him, I think what a brilliant player he is, and he's obviously scored, he is getting withdrawn on like the 65th, 70th minute. Traore's there. He's obviously, if you've got Traore on the bench, he's going to come on for one of those attacking players. And at the minute, he's coming on for the likes of Podent. So I don't want my players to only be getting the sort of 65, 70 minutes. That's why, like you said, Zaha is like a 90-minute man every week. Same as like Jack Grealish is just like obviously a standout player. And if Grealish was subbed off on the 85th minute in the last game, he would have left the game with just one assist, but he played on and got got assist and a goal in like the 91st and 96th minute or something. So yeah, I fully agree with that. But like you said, if Man City start putting up in their attacking numbers to sort of what we've seen in previous years, then we can expect to see Foden scoring well despite limited minutes, because if Man City are bagging 5-6 goals, he can, you know, grab a goal and assist in the last half an hour, or grab a couple of goals if he plays just the first 60 minutes. So we'll have to wait and see what if City improve attacking numbers wise.
Yeah, there's a really fun way of looking at this, which I have done, which is comparing kind of Grealish as a kind of the touchstone, I think, maybe because it's this week, maybe because I own him, but I think he's a good example of a 90-minute talisman, and comparing him to a combined City net, which is around the same price tag. So since the start of 2019-20, Jack G has played 3,973 minutes, got 12 goals, 12 assists, cost 7.3 million, and he scored 203 points in that time. So all of last season plus up to this season right now. Comparing this to City net, what I've done basically is combine all of those kind of factors for Foden, Mahrez and Bernardo Silva. And I've averaged that out to create sort of a middle kind of mean City player who isn't a premium. So he's not kind of Sterling or De Bruyne. He's kind of this player would play for City, and it's just kind of an amalgamation, averaging out of all their points. What you get is a player who plays about 2,000 minutes, has scored 8 goals and 7 assists, cost 7.5 million and scores 139 points. So compare Grealish to this sort of average City player, and what you're actually buying for around the same is a lot more minutes, so about 19 more games on the pitch in total. Like this is kind of looking at samples that I remember from the start of last year up until now. 4 more goals, around 5 more assists. You're paying 0.2 million more for the City player, and your cheaper talisman scores 64 more points. So again, maybe underlining talisman theory. And of course, this is highly unscientific, usual caveats apply, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a really interesting way of illustrating that point, in that kind of the players who mean a lot to individual teams are going to play. Like, it's a great point, Wes, that if Grealish had left the field in the 85th minute, he would have got 10 less points than he actually ended up with. And it's a really nice way of just showing the importance of these sorts of players to their teams. And maybe predictably, we are again veering towards just saying, buy the talisman, people. Right. And just to cover off, I guess, where's the scope for risk taking here? You know, where's the opportunity if we're kind of all going to be corralling around the same sort of individuals, you know, your Grealishes, maybe, you know, your Wilsons of this world. Where would you guys say the opportunity lies?
I've got a question for you guys, actually, about my latest transfer in. For this game week, I bought in Lookman. Would you class that as a risk, a gamble, or is that more of a safe pick because he's only 5 million? I think he's only owned by about 0.5% of managers. I was using a small sample and then trying to extrapolate that out, and and hoping that it comes off. So I'd say I've taken a bit of a risk there, and especially as many people on Twitter like to point out to me how bad Fulham are. Would you say that's a risk, or, you know, because of his price, is it not a risk?
Did you say you've got Suchek as well, haven't you?
I've got both at the minute. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'll, you know, I've got some money in the bank, so at some point I might upgrade one and then just, you know, whichever one remains in my team, I might put to the bench, or I might just continue with both.
I kind of see Lookman almost, because of the price, almost like a safe pick, but perhaps a, you know, slightly off the wall safe pick. I mean, I remember him, like, when he was at Everton, sort of coming through the ranks, he was kind of in the same zone as Calvert-Lewin at that time, and then I think he went off to Germany, hasn't done much. Now he's playing at Fulham, but he seems to be playing week in, week out, so that's positive. He's dirt cheap, you know. I've got Bissouma at 4.5 million, but I'd probably say Lookman's got a much bigger, even though Bissouma scored, Lookman's still got that much bigger goal threat. So, you know, I don't think it's the biggest risk, because you're not spending a lot of your money on this guy. Ultimately, he can sit there on your bench, come on, and if he, and, you know, and if he's nailed in, which seems like he is, then you know, there's no harm done, really, owning him or not owning him.
I mean, I don't know, I class Lookman as a low risk, high reward sort of character, because you're not paying very much at the end of the day. Like, it's kind of priced into the player what you're likely to get, but there is a kind of a seat where you're hoping that the stats would extrapolate, as you put it, out into a decent sort of enough ceiling. I probably wouldn't have voluntarily bought him myself, but I can see why you would, if that makes sense, just because he had a really low ownership. And I think kind of those low ownership examples of where you are going to find opportunity. So I can see why he went there. I can understand that. I guess one thing I would mention here is kind of with ownership, is observing split pin ownership if there's two assets in the team. So people like Adam Hopcroft have done very well out of backing Mane over Salah, for example, maybe not this week, but you know what I mean. And I guess going forward, maybe backing someone like Rashford over Bruno Fernandes could be a good idea, because that means that, you know, if everyone's going one way, then you go another. I mean, I tried that Richarlison versus DCL, and look what that's left me. But every now and again, that can definitely work out for you. With those players of risky minutes, I mean, I'm not saying that, I don't think Lookman would be, but there are some players who you may, you know, want to take a punt on, for example, you know, getting Aguero in or getting Jesus in. But you have to know what you're getting into, and it's fun when it does pay off and reward you, but it really isn't when your man plays 9 minutes, as many found out this week. So it's one of those things where you've got to really weigh up what you kind of mentally can deal with. And I'm sure you're not the kind of guy who's been having a meltdown about their words, because you knew what you were buying into.
Obviously, it's still only one game. I'm still not giving up hope on him. It's just an example. But yeah, back to the sort of risk taking. A player like Martial right now in the current climate is a player that I wouldn't personally touch, because I'm not a very risky manager at all. Whereas if you are one of those who likes, you know, a gamble, and you maybe just think that he is going to hit the ground running after his ban, we know he's got the potential to do that. But for me, I want to see at least the potential there in, like, you know, a game or two. He could blank in those games, but I want to see him getting shots off before I take a full-on punt. Man United aren't playing very well every single week as well. So that's just another example of I'm more safety, and Lookman's about as risky as I get.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's like smoking a cigarette and calling it a drug, isn't it? Nick, what do you reckon about risk then?
Well, I think it's been the traditional prevailing theory since we started the pod that I'm the less risky risk taker of the two. You're always the one that goes for some more outrageous punts.
Oh, yeah, but look at how the ORs have ended up. Boring is the way forward.
I know I mean, that Martial example is quite a good one. I remember when you backed KDB when he was coming back from injury 2 years ago, and that kind of didn't work out for you, and just stuff like that. I think it's just, sorry to dredge that old story up again, but it's just, I think generally I just kind of go with the safer options, like Wes. I kind of like to see a player play at least a game or two, you know, rather than bringing them straight back into my team, or, you know, I want to see something. I don't want to just, I'm not kind of one just to say, all right, you know, next week's the week to back Raheem Sterling or something like that, when he's been on like a terrible run of form. I'd like to see at least one performance where he might get a goal or assist, and I think actually Sterling might be someone back on my radar. So I kind of like, I'm a bit of a more of a kind of, you know, patient player, and back players that at least done something first.
Yeah, you'll jump on the bandwagon rather than starting it. I get that. I think I'm I'm always obsessed with finding the next bandwagon, but often that means that I overlook really obvious moves. Not so much this year, although I don't own Dermot Calvert-Lewin, of course. So back to the main sort of question then. What team structure best suits the current challenges? It sounds like kind of we're favouring solid starters with two bench assets you can call on. And as mentioned, I like kind of a 4.5 million defenders or something, or as Wes said, you know, 3-5-2 of Brewster or something. And it kind of sounds like we are, I'm not too sure about it, it doesn't sound particularly sexy, but as you said at the start of the season, these obvious moves, these kind of safety first players, these talisman do seem to be the ones that we're veering towards in terms of the ones that we should at least that seem at the moment to be best equipped to help us deal with the situation. So that's a good summary, Wes. Is that kind of where you put it in terms of when you were thinking about this question earlier?
Yeah, 100%. Don't want to go over the same things again, but yeah, hit the nail on the head there, mate.
I'm kind of liking the 3-4-3 at the moment, just in general. I think, you know, it seems to be working out pretty well with sort of Kane and DCL and some other third striker who can be rotated between the likes of Bamford or Wilson or Jimenez or Adams, who's the current man. But I can see people going for the 3-5-2 with Brewster, and if Brewster continues to start and perhaps even scores, then that might come in vogue. But, you know, at the moment, I feel like just the way the 3-4-3 works, so if you've got these kind of Bissouma, Souček type characters that can sit on the bench, and then having those rotating defenders was working pretty well as well. You know, I've got, as part of my wildcard, I've got in Dallas and Walker Peters and Lamptey, and all of those guys, just, you know, I just pick one or two of them each week and just play around with who plays. And if someone is injured or someone is like out the game with COVID or whatever, then I've, at least I've got someone who will come off the bench and hopefully for a clean sheet or even a goal.
Yep, the importance of 2 points, eh? Right, let's take a break there and move on to the corresponding Q&A after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. If you want to join the league, the code is CPSULF, and I'm just going to run through the top five because that's the easiest. In fifth, it's Zachy Shane with the Zakaria team. He's dropped four places. He only got 54 points this week, so pretty average score there. But someone who did have a really good week was David Izzet with Hest Wham Untied. He got 83 points this week, which is a fantastic score. So he's kind of rocketed up the ranks there. Captained Kane, but, you know, he had the key men like Zouma and Grealish and Wilson, Calvert-Lewin, all sort of getting him the points this week. So great score for him there. In third, Mohamed Mohsen remains in third with Hunter. He got 61 points this week. We've got Borisav Joksimovic in second with 64 points. But in first, we've got Graham Sessoms with HK10 for Golden Boot. He's obviously a Spurs fan there. And he got 59 points. So, you know, seems like lots of people have really good weeks. Well done, guys. All the guys at the top.
Cool, yeah, well done, everybody. Let's move on to the correspondence this week. No Irishman to squeal in joy. Instead, you've got a Londoner to, what would we say, broguing, talk to you, exclaim to you in joy about the correspondence this week. It's from Mitchell Sterling, our statistician, the man behind Talisman Theory. He writes in saying, "Hello, lads, long-time listener, and this email isn't my first rodeo. Some of us who started well and haven't needed to take hits or use wildcard are starting to get FOMO and have a few fires to put out. So what's a wildcard worth? If I think Team A will score 550 points over the first 10 game weeks and over the next 10 game weeks and Team B 551, it's not worth it. But what benefit are you looking for? Tom is also planning to hold for the Aston Villa double game week, by which he means game week 19. What does he hope that his wildcard will be worth? Thanks, Mr. Bergstrom." There's a Simpsons reference for those who get it. So I guess I can answer for me in a minute, but I guess, is there a target point benefit, guys, or any other benefits you think is kind of clear to all? I think realistically, people only look at a wild card versus their old team on 1 week, which is after they play it. After that, I think they forget all about their old team and just carry on with their new one and don't really refer back to what was there before, right? I mean, you guys are both wildcarded, but what were you looking to get out of it? Was it, I mean, Luke Wilson-esque sort of price rises? Was it just a refresh to your team? Did you have a points target over your old team? How do you approach those things?
It wasn't really, you know, Team A versus Team B, which will score more, because it's almost impossible to do so. If I look back at my team prior to my wildcard, a wildcard in week three. So if I look at my week two team, that wouldn't be my team this week, because I'd have made, you know, four or five transfers by then, or maybe even a minus four or two. So I'd have probably changed half that squad anyway. So I never really look and, you know, compare it in terms of X amount of points compared to my old squad. I just try and use it when I see fit for my team, the first wild card. And I did feel like it was needed in week three. There was a fair amount of players I wanted to get on that I couldn't get easily without, you know, a big minus hit. And it wasn't sort of a team value thing. That's more secondary for me. It was more, yeah, just getting on players I wanted to get on and moving forward from there. I don't, there's no real point looking back at your old team pre-wildcard. You can't get that team back. For example, I took out Callum Wilson, which at the time made some sense, but he's gone on a decent run since then. But I also took out players who haven't done well. So, yeah, I don't really look at that. And in terms of my second wild card, I know that's not really what the question was, but I typically wait for, you know, the double game weeks later on in the season and try and utilise two of those chips together.
Yeah, I guess I'm the same in terms of I'm not massively reflective in terms of what my old team was. Once I've got rid of those players, they're kind of, you know, they're dead to me. I don't kind of really think about, oh, you know, what happened. I mean, obviously, you kind of look at it a little bit in the first week. For instance, I transferred out Werner and then he got that return. But since then, I'm still happy with who I brought in for him, which was Harry Kane. So, you know, I don't try and, you know, analyse it too much once I've moved, I kind of move on quite quickly. But I guess in terms of what I do with my wild card, it's not always just about the next game week. It's almost about the next five. And that's what I kind of try and target with my wild card. So it might be that I'm thinking, oh, I can get 10 plus points on my team from last week, but then maybe I can get 5+ and continue on. And, you know, I look at sort of why I wildcarded early on, and my game week one team was pretty rubbish. And, you know, I didn't realise at that point that likes of Kane and Son and Calvert-Lewin would be the stars of the season. And those are the kind of guys I brought in. I think Calvert-Lewin actually got in the week before, but on my wildcard, for instance, I got Kane and Son in. I also got Zouma and Grealish in. So those guys like really, really delivered for me this week. I also got a couple other characters in, like Martinez and Robertson, who did well initially in that first week, got instant returns from them, no blanks this week. And also strengthened my depth in terms of the bench, which obviously been a major talking point for this pod. I got in Lamptey and Dallas and Walker Peters and all those guys. So I'm pretty comfortable in terms of why I wildcarded, what, you know, the points I've got out of it, the strength and depth I've got now. And, you know, obviously, I think also if I, that particular week, I really needed Kane and Son. It felt like I was missing out majorly on points by not having them. So I'd have probably had to take a hit to get both of them in. So factoring in elements like, you know, why I wildcarded to avoid a -4, to avoid a -8, to get the key guys in. You know, those are, in terms of going back to the question, that's what a wild card's worth for me.
Yeah, so it sounds like kind of perceived strength and depth and kind of saving yourself points in terms of hits. Interesting that kind of contrast to what Mitchell was thinking it could be, which is kind of a points target. So it sounds kind of more qualitative rather than quantitative factors for both of you. You know, I feel like my team was looking like it needed a few players to be removed. And you both kind of said, oh, I don't really look at the past team, which is fair enough. I completely agree with that. If I wildcard, I don't really look at the last team apart from that one week. The week that I do it, because obviously it's like morbid curiosity, isn't it, to see what I could have got if I'd have held back. I guess to talk about the late wild cards, I'm still kind of sat there as it is. So just to explain the situation, game week 16 this year, instead of game week 18 is the last time you can use the wild card one, as I'm sure you will know. And on game week 18, we're looking that you're going to have 10 teams blanking. And on game week 19, we're looking to have 10 teams doubling. So the idea is to hold the game week, the first wild card, all the way into game week 16, if I can, and then kind of 18 and 19 kind of reap the rewards. The man himself, Ben Creden, says it's still wise to do this. If one or both of the game one blanks, if it's game week 17, for example, it won't be confirmed until 15. And we're not going to find out very much more until until later on in the season. And we're still going to be able to prepare basically for double game week 19 if you play your wild card in game week 16. So basically, if I'd held my wild card, I'll be hoping to optimize my team for that period. A few other kind of considerations as well. I can make Pontilicious transfers around December, which may not be advisable to you guys. Plan to navigate the blank and double. And I can optimize for the double, of course. The wild card is a very powerful chip, and you know, you both had positive outcomes from using it. I'm not going to lie. I'm now tempted to use it over the international break. I was playing with some teams, and it's looking very tight in terms of getting to the setup that I want. You know, players like getting in the City players for their run. We're going to speak about that in a bit. And United players, that is looking incredibly difficult unless I do wild card or take some quite large hits. So it may be time game week nine to pull it. It does feel a bit of a disappointment though to have got this far, but I don't think my rank is good enough as it stands to do it. I'll probably try to hold on this week, maybe make a 1 week punt or something and then take it from there. As I've said a few times, like, you know, I was all about this kind of late wild card, but doggedly clinging to it isn't a good idea. And it's been a really interesting experience, I'd say, as well, to have that kind of mental blocker to wild carding, because there have been a few wild cards that have kind of, I'm not going to name names, but spectacularly failed. And I've been able to avoid a few pitfalls, a few bad wild cards that I've seen in recent times that have been very much about just that last week. So I've kind of gotten over those. And in past years, I would have kind of fallen into them. But now it feels like I'm kind of stretching my team to the very end of where it can get to. So I think that's probably the good point to wild card and maybe feeds into both your points. And if I do get a decent team out this week, send transfer and captains, I'm not going to be doing anything. If I do get a decent score this week, then maybe I'll change my mind. But at the moment I'm kind of starting to get itchy feet and thinking, yeah, maybe game week nine for the United and City kind of change in fixtures is going to be the time that I do it. So yeah, good question this week. Thanks very much, Mitchell. If you have any questions, queries, pet theories, ideas, or indeed poems that you'd like read out, analysed, evaluated on the podcast, do write in whogotthisist@gmail.com and Anthony will be only too pleased to read them out with a squeal of the Hibernian delight. Right, let's move on to the Q&A. And quite a few questions this week. Put them up on my green tea break and quite a few people got in, so well done to you. Let's start off with the fixtures fix. So our good friend Aaron Boyle is wildcarding and wants to know which fixtures we're eyeing up over the next six. So Wes sent us a message earlier saying, please let me go first. I'm guessing there's a lot of killer insight here. What have you seen, Wes? What would you be advising Aaron to do?
I'm going to highlight Chelsea and West Ham. West Ham, as we all know, have had a horror run up until week seven. Now they're moving on to Fulham this week, and they're also facing Sheffield United and Villa in the next three. And obviously Villa are rejuvenated, but they've lost their last two. So their fixtures are turning. But a caveat to that is that it's going to be interesting to see how West Ham line up now off with at the start of the season. In most of the games, they've been the underdog. They can set their stall out to defend and, you know, sit back and potentially counter-attack. But they've defended well in their sort of 3-5-2 formation. But it's interesting if that carries on. Obviously, the assets from their team, sort of defensive-wise, Cresswell, Krufal and Masuaku. Cresswell's right up there with for expected assists out of those three. He does seem like the prime pick. He is about 0.5, 0.6 more expensive. I think he's 5.1 now. Whereas there's a 4.5. Fornals in midfield. He's literally someone I've never, ever even thought about bringing into my team, but he's ticking over nicely. He's got 5 attacking returns in the open 7 games, and he's owned by less than 1% of managers, I should say. And he's only 6.4 million. And we have West Ham in terms of expected goals conceded. I think I mentioned Chelsea's earlier as the best. West Ham was until this game week, but they're still doing pretty well. They've got an expected goals conceded of 8.33. They're looking good on all fronts, but I do wonder if it's going to be one of those cases where they actually struggle against the weaker teams. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Kind of traditional West Ham, they feel like one of those teams that a bit of a trap. Like I've avoided their defenders successfully for the last few years. I do like their fixtures and I do like their form this season. They're very much improved. I kind of wrote them off a little bit like Villa at the beginning of the season, but yeah, with Fulham and Sheffield United up next and Villa as well. I'm also looking at Jared Bowen, who's another asset at West Ham who's doing particularly well. He's got a few goals to his name, and he's got with Fulham up next, he's got a pretty decent record against Fulham with three goals, I think, in the four games he played against them in the Championship. So he's certainly one I'm looking at. You mentioned Chelsea, of course. A couple other teams I kind of looked at, kind of just when I was looking at the fixture ticker, and I thought actually they've got some pretty decent fixtures, are Newcastle and Palace. So Newcastle, I think with both two teams, there's only one player for each of them that you can name, and those are the talisman, as we talked about. You know, as I said earlier, you know, repeat the stat that Wilson has sort of been involved with eight of the nine goals at Newcastle. Zaha's been involved with six of the eight goals at Palace. And Wilson's actually, we're talking about this just off air as well, that he's now overtaken Calvert. He's actually got more points than Calvert-Lewin this season, which was just a bit of a surprise to see that. So
yeah,
in terms of those teams, if you're looking at any assets this week, it's kind of perhaps Zaha for me, because I'm looking for it's actually moved us on to the next question a little bit, so which Tom will introduce in a second, but it's probably Zaha for me because of I'm looking to get rid of Pulisic because obviously he's injured. So yeah, did you want to jump in on this, Tom, and then introduce the next question,
which yeah,
I think answered?
Yeah, I think you guys have kind of I think highlighted a lot of them. I think that, you know, Aaron's on this week, I think that kind of changes things a tiny bit, because I think if I was doing it, I'd go a week later over international break, just because there's a big turn of fixtures there, and the ones you guys have mentioned do make sense. And just look a bit further afield as well, I know Villa have kind of fallen out of favour a little bit after two negative outcomes, but I mean their run of games is still pretty damn good. I mean, after Arsenal, they don't face another top six team until game week 16, so that's a really good run of fixtures for Villa. And then most people have got Martinez and Grealish already, but still worth highlighting. Everton come back after game week 8, they've got Fulham, Leeds and Burnley as a free. But I think Liverpool, Man United and Man City, very boringly, also have good fixtures coming up. So Liverpool past game week 10 embark on a nice run all the way up until game week 18, where they only play Spurs. So from game week 10 all the way into game week 18, they've only got one Liverpool fixture, and that's at home. Man City, as most people already know, turn around things spectacularly by game week 10. Their run becomes very, very nice. Talk about Man City's attack in just a bit. And Man United as well. That game week 9 game after the international break against West Brom is going to be absolutely huge, I think, for a lot of people. There'll be a lot of people buying into Bruno, buying into Rashford for that. And United as well embarking a really nice run. Again, all the way up until game week 18, where they only play Man City, in terms of any worrying fixtures, maybe Leicester game week 15 as well to worry about. But there will be quite a few kind of teams that will do come into good fixtures, which we'll see the complexion of our teams change a little bit. And kind of allied to that, you'll see Spurs after the West Brom game, their fixtures do become a bit more difficult. They have City, Chelsea, Arsenal and Liverpool in the space of 5 game weeks, and maybe be looking at that and thinking, okay, maybe I can go without one of Son and Kane. At the moment that's unthinkable, but when the fixtures do stiffen, other teams do start to look quite interesting, then maybe you start to kind of think, okay, I'm going to jump across. So if you are wildcarding now, I think you've got to really be factoring that in, Aaron, alongside the nice points these guys have made about initial returns and now agree with West Ham and things. Oh, I wish Antonio was fit. This was his time, wasn't it? Let's move on to the mid-price midfielders then. As Nick alluded to, we have already started answering this. And obviously it's on Nick's mind because he's had Pulisic, who's been crocked. Benny Blanco has a similar issue and he's looking at what to do with Pulisic. I suspect people will be looking in this area, you know, like selling Hammers or whatever. But Benny asked what to do. Should he go sideways to Ziyech, conform on Grealish, or go with Rashford?
When I was thinking about potentially squeezing in one of these midfielders, Rashford was the one that I liked. He is a little bit more expensive than obviously the likes of Grealish, Zaha, Ziyech. But yeah, I really like Rashford, and he was obviously blanked against Arsenal, but up until then he was looking really good in the Champions League and Newcastle away, which wasn't too long ago either. But yeah, to bring it back to that sort of price range or cheaper, maybe the West Ham guys again, Bowen, Fornals, or I still like Zaha. Obviously blank this week, and I know that I saw a few frustrated Zaha owners actually sort of saying, oh, who should I? I'm going to go Zaha to Ziyech. And I'm thinking, Zaha's a player I'd actually quite like. One, for their fixtures, like was just alluded to, and second, the talisman aspect of owning him. And he's on penalties still potentially with Milojevic, however you say it, being suspended. If you do own him, then you probably want to maybe keep him for a couple more games. If he's got those penalties, he's got those decent fixtures. And overall, he has improved his goal and assist output this season compared to last. So he is getting more final end product, whatever you want to call it. So I do still like Zaha, that price range. I've got Grealish as well. And again, I like him. I think he's one of those who can probably outperform XG potentially in terms of his goal he scored against Southampton was ridiculous, lucky, really. So I can see him scoring those types of goals, then maybe missing the sort of, he missed like a 6-yard header, didn't he? Good save from the keeper. But yeah, I like all those options. Some are kind of obvious, others maybe not so much, but yeah.
Fair enough. I think because Benny doesn't own Grealish, I think that it's worth just kind of saying, yeah, I know it's not very interesting to say conform, but I think conforming on Grealish here is a good idea. He's got that toxic mix of form and fixtures still. And even though he's kind of blank recently, and maybe some people say, oh yeah, but you would say that because he's scored 15 points. But I think he's still the man, you know. I mean, just watching him play, like the last game against Leeds, for example, he could have got a goal and assist another day. You put a really good post out on Twitter, didn't you, Wes, about him getting 15 points rather than two. A goal clear off the line, something like that. And this week we've actually got that 15. But you know, he's top for MPXG amongst mids in that 6 to 8.5 million bracket. He's top for XA, and he's joint top for shots and shots in the box with Zaha, who Nick's going to mention very, very harshly in a minute. And he's got the best XGI as well, amongst 6 to 8.5 million. So, yeah, I think it's a case of just going for the obvious if it's you, Benny. I mean, you know, the likes of Hammers, for example, still taking along nicely. Ziyech, I like from a football standpoint, you know, could have been kind of, he could be kind of Chelsea's Bruno and being the guy who knits everything together. Brilliant assist numbers in the Eredivisie, as well as crucially the Champions League. So we're able to say, okay, it's not just the Eredivisie. He can also do it in the Continental League against decent opponents as well. And Rashford, yeah, I mean, he's been good. He's been on and off, but the Prime Minister, I mean, there's a case that form is temporary, class is permanent with him. And I suspect the upcoming fixtures, which I mentioned earlier on, could well see fixtures get form. But I guess Zaha is one that I mentioned as well. Wesley, you just mentioned him. Nick, I'm sure you will in a sec. Second for MPSG and shots. But my worry is he may struggle to find consistency. Nonetheless, good route to points with the Penguins as well. And he's seemingly enjoying his football, isn't he, Nick? He's a guy who's firmly in your sights, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, he is in my sights, as alluded to. Yeah, I think I do like Palace's next four, sort of Leeds at home. I thought Leeds, I was enjoying, you know, owning Dallas because they seemed defensively competent, but they did kind of play a high line against Leicester and got exposed several times by Jamie Vardy and Harvey Barnes. So I think I can see the same from Zaha. And as I said, owning Dallas as well is kind of hedging my bets a little bit. If I lose that Dallas clean sheet, it's probably going to be Zaha that gets the goal. So that's a positive for me in terms of what I'm thinking about. I was planning actually Jared Bowen, as I said originally, he was kind of the player I was going to bring in for that Fulham at home game, but Fulham, I didn't watch it either because I didn't pay for it, but Fulham looked better, or sounded like they were better against West Brom, so maybe he's off the radar now. I'm not convinced totally on that one, but another player, as I just mentioned, was Harvey Barnes, who looked pretty good in the game tonight. And in terms of the midfielders, sort of under 8 million, he's now actually top for goal attempts with 18, 14 of which have been inside the box. So he's certainly one that should be considered at 6.9 million. He's got a couple of goals to his name. Zaha and Grealish are only just behind him in terms of goal attempts, though, with 17. And I think if you don't own Grealish, I'd probably just say Grealish over all of them. If you don't own him, get him in. Because not only goal attempts for Grealish, it's also massive on the assists as well, chances created. He's had 17 chances created, which is top for all midfielders around that price point. So I reckon for me, in terms of the picks, if I was to pick one for someone to bring in, it'd be Grealish. But it's also worth highlighting, he doesn't really have the fixture this week with Arsenal, because they're actually pretty improved defensively in terms of goals conceded, which is the least of all the teams so far this season.
Cool. All right. Moving on to the next question, which is Sticky Toffee. So we get this question at the start of the season every year with whoever is looking fantastic, but they start to trail off. So FPR Matt asks, has Everton's bubble burst and should we jump off? Oh, quite an interesting one there, just because, well, I mean, we get it every year, don't we? We always have a team who is out of the blocks, and we kind of think, oh, well, when do we sell these guys? Do we hold them? Are they going to come back to form, or is it just all over now? Everton are a really interesting example. So I compared their XG game weeks 1-4 and game weeks 5-7. 1-4, 8.47 XG, 12 scored. Game weeks 5-7, I'm aware it was one less game, obviously, but 3.36 XG, 3 goals scored. A tiny sample size, but I wonder if absence is more than anything I've taken their toll. So 3 big chances created recently in the last 3 games versus 9 big chances created in the first 4, 27 chances created in the last 3 games versus 40. 1 in the first four. So another case where fixtures may get form again, because after the international break, they do start with Fulham and have a nice little run. But maybe it's a case the B team isn't good enough. I don't know. I wouldn't be saying sell right now. I'm probably going to be keeping James unless I go for a 1 week punt and then go into a wild card, in which case I'll sell him for Bowen. But if I had, you know, DCL, if you've got someone like that, and if you're indeed looking to buy a player in, I wouldn't be writing Everton off just yet. What do you think, Wes? Is it time to jump off Everton? Is it time to tell people to walk away from Everton if they're looking to buy them in?
For me, it's not a bubble burst. And like you say, obviously you guys on the pod get it every year and you see it on Twitter, which is why I keep tweeting every now and again saying it looks like Aston Villa won't win the league.
I thought we were just having to go Adam Hotcroft there.
Yeah. Sorry, Adam. Everton and Villa have been quite similar in that regard, in terms of they've both started really well and then the last couple of results haven't gone their way. But obviously, Everton lost at the weekend, but DCL still scored. DCL's only blanked once. James Rodriguez, I'm assuming, is a minor issue. So once he's back, creativity is going to be higher, you'd assume. And likewise with Luca Dean coming back from just the one game suspension. So he'll be back next week to potentially provide those crosses to DCL like he did in the Liverpool game. So, yeah, no, I wouldn't be coming off them. In terms of over the course of the season, Calvert-Lewin is third highest for overall XG, and he's actually top for non-penalty XG. So I'm sticking with Calvert-Lewin. If I had James Rodriguez in my squad and he was declared fit, I'd be sticking by him as well. And yeah, I think what the bigger picture for this sort of question is to highlight, I wasn't getting carried away with Everton either, but likewise, I'm not getting carried away with their dip. And that's the same for Villa as well. I wasn't tripling up on Everton and Villa. And likewise, now I'm not selling Grealish and DCL. So yeah, both teams have both got a few good assets and there's no reason to panic.
I feel like I've got two Nicks on the pod. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it'd be mad to sell Calvert-Lewin right now. Obviously, he returned, but it's worth highlighting. You know, the underlying stats might not look great, but Calvert-Lewin's still getting some goals in. They were very short of their best players in that last game. They had no Seamus Coleman, no Luca Dean, no James Rodriguez, no Richarlison. All of those guys were out. They've got United up next. You never know what kind of United will turn up. So there's every chance Calvert-Lewin will get a return in that game. And then after that, they've got Fulham away and everyone should be back for that game. So I expect there's going to be quite a high XG coming out of that game. And then after that, it's Leeds and Burnley. So plenty more chances for Everton players to get their return. So yeah, if you've got Calvert-Lewin, certainly hang on to him. If you've got James, I mean, it's up to you. We've talked about a lot of the other midfield options out there if you don't have your Grealishes or your Zahas. Yeah. But I know you've got him, haven't you, Tom? You've still got James? Or
yeah, I've still got him, yeah. But I paid
so what's are you hanging on to him? Are you gonna
I don't know yet. If I decide that I'm going to wildcard over the international break, then I'm going to sell James for Bowen this week. I agree with you all, really. But you have to just hold on for the time being. And, you know, you may end up with kind of the ownership's been so high, especially for Dominic Calvert-Lewin all year long now, because in Mountain Dead teams, you're earning 57%, I think it is, ownership DCL. Like, throughout the course of the year, if he scores a goal and he's not in your team, he's going to punish you. And that's just facts now, because there's been so many people who've got dead teams and they're never going to leave those teams. His ownership's probably going to be a threshold about 35-40% for the rest of the season. So yeah, there's always gonna be a case to own him just for safety reasons. And you know, it has been his breakout season so far, even though Wilson has outscored him. And I think that Wilson answer probably helps us with the cheap forwards question. The next one, I'm going to breeze over it, unfortunately, because I haven't got much time. But Brian Varghese, he asked which cheap forwards we're favouring. I think it's probably going to be Wilson. It's just such a shame that Antonio's injured, because I think that this was his time. Moving on to the penultimate question, defensive judgment. So our friend Rishi, Morpheus Fire, he says that Chelsea, Arsenal and West Ham are all posting good defensive numbers. Adam Pritchard asks if Drip Master General Hector Bellerin is worth a look in that Arsenal kind of area. And Nick said they're a very good defensive lead and they are defensive kings this year. And Slim Shady, Gil Prab, says Man City defence also caught his eye. So I guess a good way of kind of mincing all the questions into one is, what would our defence look like if, say, we wildcarded right now? I'm going to ask you both a question first, which is quite a fun one. Who's had the most shots in the box of any defender? so far this year?
I think that's all it says. It's Harry Maguire, isn't it?
Slather. But I don't think I'd be buying him. But Zouma, Nick, I think probably he'd be one who'd be featuring heavily. The likes of Chilwell and things like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Zouma's already in my team. But yeah, I wouldn't be selling him, certainly, if you were looking at wildcarding right now. I think either Zouma or Chilwell would certainly do a job. I'd say either's brilliant for your team, to go for either one of those guys. Maybe even double up if you're feeling daring. I do like Arsenal. I don't actually like Arsenal, but I like their assets right now. And Bellerin, I think, is an excellent option there. 5 million, he's super cheap. I did have a look at his underlying stats and I was a little bit disappointed. He's only actually had the one goal attempt so far, so you're not going to get many attacking returns from him in terms of the way they're playing right now. But they do look very much defensively assured. So looking at the next five, I can see a few clean sheets coming their way. So that's positive. He did win the penalty as well this game week, so picked up an assist through that route, which many defenders seem to be currently. I think you mentioned City as well. I quite like Cancelo. He's been pretty creative with sort of 9 chances created so far, which is 5th for the midfielders. And I think City, again, like Arsenal, they seem to have improved defensively, even though their attack's struggling. I think the pairing of Diaz and Laporte seems to add a little bit of calm to the proceedings compared to what we've seen previously, which was sort of ramshackle days of Stones and Otamendi. They've only conceded 21 shots on target, which is the joint best of all teams. I guess if I was to call out another player, another one not in my team, I think Wes mentioned him earlier, was Cresswell for West Ham. As I said, he does play for West Ham, which is always a negative, but they've got some great fixtures and he's joint top for chances created with 13. And he's got 3 assists to his name as well. So I'd probably be talking about selling those Liverpool defenders, very unfortunately. Because they've been sort of staples of our team for the last few years, haven't they? It feels very odd to go without a Liverpool defender. But I don't know. I think there's some cheaper options. You get rid of someone like Robbo, you bring Bellerin, you've got 2 million extra to play around. And it might even allow you to afford someone like Rashford or Bruno if you're planning on investing in United's attack later on.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like the time for Liverpool players, does it, at the moment? I think that the fixture swing will see perhaps some fashionability for the likes of Robertson and the likes of Trent as well, perhaps. But very interesting. I probably agree with all of those, so I'm not going to go into mine. Wes, what do you reckon?
Yeah, literally just retweet what Nick says is what I was going to say. And I'd probably add into the mix in terms of a balance of, you don't want to be having in all of those sort of 5 million plus defenders. I'd probably have Kilman in there, 4.2 million, as the best sort of cheap option now that Mitchell's out of the picture, probably. And Van Aanholt is probably too early for me to jump on him, but he's a
bit of a punt, isn't it, for a boring manager? Who are you talking
about?
I
wouldn't.
Are you drunk? Have you had too many beers during then?
I've had too much water. Yeah, he isn't someone I'm going to be bringing in right away. But if I was a risk taker, then you could benefit there because of their fixture run, because of how attacking he can be. He got he would have got an assist for Batshuayi in the last game, but Batshuayi was half a yard offside from a kind of a pass cross into the box. And there's theories that PVA may also be on penalties or ahead of Zaha in the penalty order.
I don't know how that works. That's just rumours as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know either. Just for balance, like I said, Kilman, all the players Nick mentioned. And probably someone like Lamptey, he's still attacking. Brighton's defensive numbers aren't too bad and he's still only about 4.6, 4.7 million. So if you're looking to have, because we don't want to be putting too much budget into defence with the likes of maybe having, Chilwell and Cancelo and Bellerin, might be a little bit too much. So the likes of Lamptey, Kilman, Dallas are still good options.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you did mention Bellerin there, my fellow vegan, and he's equal to Chilwell, equal to Jared Bowen for points moment with 33. And Arsenal have conceded, as Nick mentioned earlier, the fewest goals of any team. And we are setting up in a hard-to-beat sort of way at the moment. So we've been kind of not a fashionable narrative to push, but we have been incredibly boring and incredibly solid at the back Gone are the days of Mustafi giving the ball to the opposition striker in the six-yard box. We're looking actually vaguely competent, especially that man Gabriel. He's looking incredibly competent for us. It's just a rarity for Arsenal to have a defensively competent player in centre-back, but we've got one. What the hell has happened? But I think Bellerin actually is quite a decent-looking individual for your team. As to answer Adam Pritchard's question, I probably wouldn't be kind of shouting from the rooftops about any of his stats so far. Maybe that's just because the fixtures have been a bit kind of hit and miss. But I mean, in general, I wouldn't mind kind of paying 5 million for him as it is. I think that is kind of quite decent in terms of having coverage, but of what's looking like a fairly solid defence. And so the other thing is probably, you know, someone like Holding or something at 4.4 or Gabriel at 5.1. Very unlikely he's going to score again or score again consistently. Just something to be said there for the Arsenal defence. But I think in terms of a Gil Prabs question, I'm really looking at Diaz as being a buy-in at some point during this season, just because, you know, I think he's got that right centre-back slot nailed pretty much for the rest of the year with Laporte on alongside him, as Nick mentioned. I think that's quite a formidable kind of centre-back pairing. Ake, likes of Stones all kind of filling in Garcia as well. But I think it'll be Diaz and Laporte for the rest of the year. And there could be, you know, 15 or 16 clean sheets to come. So it'd be good to get kind of involved with that. And plus, he had an okay goal scoring record, not a great one, but an okay goal scoring record in Portugal. So I think he'd be one that I keep an eye on. But yeah, no, I agree with you guys on that. And the final question this week, FPL Elf gets his weekly question in and asks which player who hasn't banged yet is maybe about to, and therefore will become the next bandwagon, so we can all clamber aboard early ahead of the curve. What do you guys reckon? I've got some substantial thoughts on this, but I'll leave it to you guys first. Where are you?
So I made some notes before the Leicester game and have had Vardy in there, who has kind of gone off the sort of radar. But obviously now he's just got 15 points and he has done well previously. So it's probably a bit of a cop-out saying Vardy. I'm obviously hoping Lookman, to keep talking about him, which is why I've got on him whilst he's only got the one goal in three, four games now. I'm hoping he bangs. And another one, and again, it's sort of a cop-out because they've not blanked the whole season, but Werner, he's, again, not a popular pick anymore. He's gone down in price from his starting price, which obviously shows that he's been transferred out. But now sort of Chelsea are clicking a bit better. He's obviously getting more used to Premier League, more used to playing with Chelsea, et cetera, got a goal at Burnley. He could potentially kick on now with a decent fixture run. But yeah, apart from that, not got too many others that are springing to mind.
Yeah, I guess for me, I'd probably highlight the Manchester United players. I think they've had a bit of a slow start to the season. But, you know, we saw in the Champions League, for instance, Rashford bang out a hat-trick in about 27 minutes. I think certainly he's the kind of player that could suddenly, you know, springboard into the Premier League with a bunch of goals, and especially with that West Brom at home game coming up, a few nice fixtures. I think Rashford and Bruno are a couple of players that I kind of want to be, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I kind of want to be ahead of the curve and get those guys in if I can before they get those massive returns and sort of end up in everyone's team.
And I guess Martial could fall into that category of doing literally nothing this season. Apart from your penalty in the Champions League, but yeah, in the Premier League, he's not done much at all. He could then come back in and he could be their next wagon. And likewise, I was talking about Van Aanholt earlier. I guess this question is more sort of focused towards those sort of players. But like I said earlier, I like to see just a little bit more from them before actually putting them in my team, especially when there's so many other options, especially if we're talking strikers, DCL, Wilson, Bamford, Ings when he's fit, even Jimenez, Kane, obviously, there's sort of six strikers. So is it wise to take a punt on Martial when all those players are doing well? And then obviously Vardy as well. Now to add into that, there's just so many strikers doing it that it's just probably not a wise idea to take that punt on Martial before we see a little bit from him.
Exactly. Just make sure he can be bothered. Basically, Gallic shrug from him and it's all over, as I found out to my chagrin at the start of this season. No, interesting. I had Vardy as one of the answers actually here. There's actually a sneaky, very good fixture of set of games coming up for him. From game week 10, he's got three home games in four, comprising Fulham, Sheffield United, Brighton and Everton. So two of those games, Fulham and Brighton, I can imagine Parker and Potter being naive and setting up with a high line and allowing Vardy to prosper. But no, I like a next wagon. I like looking at these. And one of the ways of doing it is the old Fabio Borja, which is looking at the underperformance for XGI, for example. And defenders, there are three. I did this before tonight's games, but Ayling, -1.33 on XGI. Midfield, Lundstram, -1.75 on XGI. And forward, Mitro, -1.86. We got two assists tonight, so I guess that's gone. None of those are interesting, are they? Of course they're not. As a wise man once said, how important are stats anyway? Instead, I think let's use our own knowledge, which settles us on one team, Man City. You guys have spoken about Man United, but let's talk about City. So we haven't seen the proper spanking yet. They've been going through the motions and grinding out results. There's a good run of fixtures coming, but it's also been great to conveniently forget about them because it means we can have the likes of Son and Kane. But I think we'll be good getting them back before long. However, this year has not been particularly good. So the XG per game, as was pointed out in XG Philosophy, is 1.57. In context, last year, this was 2.71 at this point. The year before that, 2.49, 2.42, 2.15. Yeah, not very good. 1.57. Goals after six games played for Man City. This year, 9. Years before this, 2019-20, 24 goals they scored at this point. 18-19, 19 goals. 17-18, 21. And 16-17, 18. So 9 goals now compared to double or more in previous years. What's really damning is that they're overperforming their XGI at the moment, which is ridiculous. Unthinkable at the start of the season that 9 goals would be an overperformance for them. Their XGI is 13.58 and their actual is 15 goals and assists. Burnley, Fulham, Man United, West Brom, Southampton, Newcastle, between 10 and 15. They'll be hoping that kind of turns around. As a team, maybe that's an example of using our own knowledge rather than looking at the stats and saying, right, this is probably a team which is going to come back. They are the first or second best team in the land. And then we look at the players. I'd like it to be Sterling, isn't it? I think maybe the one I point to, especially when Jesus gets back, he's the key weapon for Pep. We've established he's probably not the best in centre forward. But once they're at centre forward, he's back on the wing. Could he be the one, especially if he reverts the tap-in merchant like we saw in the restart to really push through? There's obviously De Bruyne as well, maybe the likes of Mahrez. But I really think that maybe Sterling would be the one that I point to at the moment as being the guy who may come through. 7% ownership at the moment. So I think that he'd be the one that I really point to and say that, yeah, he's looking decent. I agree with what you're saying about Man United, about Rashford, I think under 10% owned as well. But I think we're really going to see a sea change and people are going to be looking at Man City again. I'm sure there is one spanking between game week 11 and 13, for example. Game week 11, Fulham at home, and West Brom at home, game week 13. There's going to be one there. We're all going to jump on. It's definitely worth bearing those sorts of players in mind and bearing Man City in mind. We've all completely forgot about them for Spurs, but they will be back, I'm fairly sure. I think they've got too much class to not kind of begin to do better than they are doing at the moment. Right, let's move on to transfers and captains, the ending of the podcast. What are we looking to do this week? Wes, what's going on?
I've gone from a fully playing squad to issues in defence, Sace and Mitchell, and Lamptey with a hopefully just a precautionary, and then Danny Ings with, and again, positive news getting out about him. So I've got to wait until we get further news on all of those situations, really. But I'm likely to make a defensive transfer because I don't think Sace will be getting his place back. Mitchell will probably survive just because I don't really want to do a -4 to get rid of a cheap defender who won't play. So I'm likely to take Sace out for either West Ham, Arsenal or Chelsea defender, the likes of Chilwell, Bellerin or Cresswell, that sort of thing. And if Ings is out long term, Vardy or Werner, I've got a bit of money in the bank. Or I could look at the likes of Callum Wilson, who's just ticking along nicely. And captain, I'm on Kane at the minute and I don't think that's going to change. They're playing West Brom. West Brom just lost to Fulham as well, a game they'd have been targeting as a must win almost. And yeah, I'm not going to look past that fixture.
No, that's fair enough. I think that, yeah, makes sense. What am I going to do? So I'm either going to roll transfer, batten down the hatches and hope for the best, or I'm going to, if I decide I'm going to wild card, do James, who's got Man United, out to Bowen. or Fornals, because I heard what you were saying about him, and he looks pretty, he does sound pretty decent. I'll have a look into that myself, but yeah, sounds pretty cool. I'm going to be captaining Son again, and Definition of Madness, go back and do it again. But I kind of think he's better away from home. And as you said, West Brom, absolute toilet, and I can't see that pass that fixture in terms of the captaincy this week. Yeah, the pen factor of Kane definitely does kind of come to mind for me. I just think that for that sort of game, it does suit Son. I thought the Brighton game suited Son, though, so I've got hope it's not an off day for him. But if they do combine like how they can, I think that he's primed to do very well. To be honest, I think both of them probably in line with double-figure scores, aren't they? Q or 1-0 West Brom victory, let's face it. But there we go. Nick, what do you reckon?
So for my captain, I'm probably going to go with Harry Kane this time. I just think, the penalty factor's really important. And I did captain Son earlier on in the season. He got me returns, but I just think I'm fancying Kane, obviously, with Salah playing City. He's kind of out of the question. So it will be Kane for me over Son. I don't really have any other reasons why, but I just fancy him. In terms of transfers, it's an enforced transfer. Pulisic out. Probably it was originally going to be Bowen, but it's probably going to be for Zaha this week. I could potentially take a -4 and ditch Robbo for characters like Cancelo or Bellerin, and that actually allows me to bring in either Bruno or Rashford ahead of the West Brom game. But I don't know if I'm going to do that. I still have the option the following week of taking a -4 and doing it the following week for that game. So for this week, it might just be someone like Zaha or Bowen, but yeah, maybe Zaha. So that's my plan anyway. Who got the assist? Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. And we were joined today by the brilliant Wes at FBO_Heisenberg. Thanks very much for coming on, mate.
Cheers, guys. Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Wes. Really cool to speak to you. I think it's the first time we've ever had you, haven't we? But we'll definitely make sure we have you again, either on this year or later on next year. Anthony will return next week, as will we. In the meantime, we hope you assisted you. Think about your team's structure going forward. Speak to you after the next game week before the international break. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Social Podcast Network.